Hey there, all you hip cats, cool kids, you guys and dolls, you diesel-powered disciples of cool. It is time once again for the Diesel Punk podcast, the voice of Diesel Punk on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and wherever you listen to quality podcasts. I am your host, the artist also known as Big Daddy Cool. You can call me Johnny, coming to you live from the Houdini Room at the Casa de Cool in fabulous Viva Nash Vegas. And joining me via the magic of the internet, he's back, ladies and gentlemen, the professor, live from the boardroom in the Dallas-Fort Worth compound. It is Larry Amyet.
Hey, everybody. It's great to be back.
It is great to have you back. We have missed you lately, and it's fantastic to hear your voice. And as always, joining us from Memphis, Tennessee, that daring darling of the skies, the one, the only, the lovely and talented Miss Daisy O'Dare.
Good evening, all you sheiks and shebas. How's it hanging out there?
Oh, I've got a comeback for that question, but it's not very mature.
Or maybe it's too mature.
I don't know. I don't think it would make it past our censors. But also joining us from New Hampshire, the man, the myth, the legend, the founder, editor-in-chief of the Fedora Chronicles, the one, the only, Mr. Eric Render King Fisk.
If Diesel Punk is wrong, well, then I don't want to be right.
You know what's really funny is I think you just quoted me there, Eric.
I did. I took your line. I purposely took your line to see if I could put a little polish on, a little nasty on
it. I like that.
And we'll talk more about that in a minute. That's a big topic of discussion tonight. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about, guys. We've got new movies. We've got some events coming up, and who knows where else we're going to go. But you are listening to the Diesel Punk podcast, and we are the voice of Diesel Punk. And coming up this weekend, guys, I want to make sure that we really give a lot of focus to this. I call him the founder, and really he is one of the founders of the genre. Tom Wilson is producing his Jazz Age on the Delaware event this Saturday in Pennsylvania. And Eric, you're going to have to help me here because I can't access the internet while I'm on the line here. So you might have to help us with the address before we finish the story. But Tom Wilson is producing this awesome, basically diesel punk festival called Jazz Age on the Delaware. He's got swing bands. He's got performance groups. He's got vendors. He's got retro vintage vendors, photo opportunities. It's just this amazing, amazing day of retro futurism, diesel punk, and even some reenactment. Jazz Age on the Delaware, and that is this Saturday, the 29th. So if you're listening to this on a Wednesday or Thursday, it's not too late to get out there. Now, unfortunately, guys, I am not going to be able to make it myself. I really, really wanted to. I did everything I could. But you guys know in my inner circle, and I might as well share this with the audience, I'm still struggling with this stupid foot issue, a medical issue. And it has just literally sucked my wallet dry. And it's amazing how expensive a little misshapen bone in your foot can really be. But so I'm not going to be able to make it myself. But Eric, are you still planning to be there?
Well, this is the perfect time to broach the topic because the thing is that what had happened with my father passing away and all the other issues that I have to associate that deal with that, I'm sadly not going to be able to make it. And it's, I really regret it. I mean, it is, it's one thing after another, and it was with some of the things that I have to deal with. I can't, I am actually bound by a gag order. I'm not allowed to discuss anything further other than the fact that I'm pretty much a prisoner here in the state of New England, as I like to jokingly call it. But for me, it breaks my heart because I've been following the development of this. But the thing is, I want everybody within the sound of our voice to go have a great time, take plenty of pictures, and get back to us. Because the thing is that we're counting on you, the listeners, to be our eyes and ears and report back to us. I'm deputizing all of you. As the sheriff of the Fedora Chronicles, I'm deputizing everybody to be our at-large reporters. Get back to us and share with us everything that happens. But I regret I'm not going to be able to go.
Yeah, I hate to hear that too. You know, sometimes life just gets in the way. And I would add to that, Eric. You know, if you're out there listening, take your iPhone along with you. iPhone, the microphone on the new iPhones is a great recording device, and you know, maybe record some interviews with some of the bands. Send them to us. We'll compile them. You can have your own episode. Daisy has done that on many occasions, and I've done that, and you know, past Diesel Punk podcast hosts have done very similar things. You know, be our correspondent, and we'll post it here. We'll post it on the Fedora Chronicles, and you know, you guys can be our correspondents, and Tome would love that. He would welcome that with open arms. So please don't hesitate to do that, and just keep us in the loop. Eric, did you have a chance to bring up the address and location of the event?
It's really easy to remember. It's so easy. I didn't even have to look into my cookies. It's really easy to remember. It's jazzageonthedelaware.com.
But what city is it happening?
Oh, see,
that's what I couldn't remember. I know it's outside of Philadelphia, but I can't remember the exact area. Jazzageonthedelaware.com.
Yes. Get all the information. All the information is right there.
Yes, and it literally is on one page, so you're not going to have to click through and find schedules and locations and how to get tickets. It's all on that one page. Tome did a great job of designing that piece. So make sure you guys go do that. Now, if you're in Middle Tennessee and you want to be a part of a pretty cool Diesel Punk event on August the 4th, which is a Friday, I am hosting, along with the Bombshell Kittens, as part of our 15-year anniversary, we're doing a brand new annual event, the very first annual Swimmin' Hole Hootenanny. And it is a Jazz Age pool party. And we're going to be doing live performances there. It starts at 5 at Pleasant Green Pool and Park in Goodlettsville, Tennessee. It's just outside of Nashville. We've rented out the entire park. So you come, you can swim, you can bring your own food, your own drinks. We're going to have the Bombshell Kittens performing aerial. You know, we got a big aerial rig set up, music, fire performances. Luna DeVica is going to dance with her pythons. It's going to be phenomenal. And this is our first year, so we're starting kind of small, but our goal is to grow this and to eventually be very much like what Tome is doing with Jazz Age on the Delaware. And you can find out more about the Swimming Hole Hootenanny at BigDaddyCoolShows.com. Just click the link that says Get Tickets to the Next Show, and that'll take you right there. Any other events going on, guys, around the country that we need to be aware of?
I don't know of any events, but I got to say, the word hootenanny, it is a word that I think we need to use more often in our daily lives.
It's one of my favorite words, and I am so glad that you are putting on a genuine hoot nanny.
Well, now, here's what's really funny about that. So this is a little inside baseball into the world of event production, okay? So we've been looking for a venue to do this for 6 months. We decided to do it about 6 months ago, and our original concept was to do, an afternoon, party lakeside or riverside or, somewhere where there was a real swimming hole, right? And we reached out to every possible venue that we could do it. And, we tried to get a sponsor in a local moonshine company, and they were interested, but none of the venues that we could go to were to be honest with you, they were scared. They were afraid of a couple of words that kept coming up in the discussions. First, Diesel Punk scared them off because they didn't know what that was. So we had to stop saying, they're a Diesel Punk variety arts group. The word burlesque really scared people off. So we had to stop using that. They're a variety arts troupe, vintage variety arts. At the end of the day, the desire to have alcohol and to have live music and a lot of noise made it really difficult for us to lock down a suitable venue. So at the end of the day, we settled on a city park here in Nashville, Pleasant Green, and we won't be able to have alcohol, which is okay by me. I'm not a drinker, but a lot of people do. And because we wanted alcohol, there was obviously a huge liability issue with water. Who'd have thunk, right?
Yes.
So we won't be able to have alcohol, and obviously the performance material has to be, squeaky clean, family friendly in this venue. But the thing is, we're going to be able to do it, to at least get the event established, to brand it. And that was the most important thing for me, was making sure that we at least get it out there and get it happening. And it really all came together in the last 3 weeks, 4 weeks, that we got the venue to agree. We got the sound variants to play live music and amplified music. We got the entire park. An investor stepped forward to cover the costs. And, it was all by providence that we're going to get to do it. So we're hoping, though, that, in years to come, we'll be able to move it to a more, a little bit more or less stringent location, and have a little bit more flexibility, more vendors, and have better sponsors. But, it's funny. I've been producing in theaters for years and years and years, and in a traditional theater, it's just money talks, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you fill the venue, or can you pay the difference? They don't care what you're going to do, how you're going to do it, or when you're going to do it, as long as they can meet their costs. In the world of finding, open, private space, everyone's got different concerns. So it has been a challenge, but we're going to do it. And we're going to have a hoot nanny. Woohoo!
Woo-hoo. Well, I tell you what you're talking about, Johnny, I recall back when I had the North Texas Ventures Life Expos. I can relate to what you're talking about. It's really tough. And when you throw in the details unique to your activity and to mine, that makes it doubly hard.
Yeah.
I can relate to everything you went through. And that ties back into Tome's event coming up.
Yeah.
By the way, I found the address. It's at a location called Glen Ford on the Delaware.
Yes.
And the word Ford is spelled odd. It's F-O-E-R-D.
Yeah, fjord. It's
fjord.
Yeah,
Glenn
it's
fjord.
It's a
Nordic here.
Yeah, a Nordic word for reverse peninsula.
Ah,
is basically what it is.
Okay, well, that's the location. It's a. But you're absolutely right. The website and just follow Eric's web address. Everything is there. Super easy to maneuver through. Great picks. Wish I could be going myself. Look forward to seeing the photos that people maybe can post for us.
Yeah, definitely. Everybody listening, if you go, take pics, record sound, send them to us. We'll definitely share them with the greater Diesel Punk community, which is a great segue.
It's a perfect segue.
I couldn't have done it better.
Hey, kids, don't try this at home. I am a trained professional. Professional what? I don't know. Anyway, so we want to talk about kind of a delicate, sensitive topic, but we want to do it with love and care. So we're gonna tread softly here. But those of you who are listening to us, who have been a part of the an active part of the Diesel Punk community, which has for the most part still been online. There have been some attempts by several of us to you know create real life flesh and blood groups and events and whatnot. But for the most part, the Diesel Punk community still is an online community. And those of you who have been active in that online community, you know that recently there was a pretty significant upheaval. And without going into a lot of detail, because the people who are listening, who are part of the community, they know what happened. But it resulted in one of the largest online Diesel Punk forums being shut down, and basically all of the members left without a home, scattered, if you will. And in the wake of the events, Eric and I quickly put our heads together. And for those of you who don't know, Eric has taken over dieselpunks.org. Larry did a great job of carrying the ball down the field after Tome retired it. And now Larry has handed it off to Eric. And so Eric and I put our heads together and we said, what can we do for our community? We need to make sure that we maintain a space, a forum that is going to be a safe place for all Diesel Punks online. And we're primarily talking about a Facebook group, because we all know that online forums have really moved to Facebook groups. And so we created the official Diesel Punks Facebook group, which is official an official group tied to dieselpunks.org in cooperation with the Diesel Punk podcast and the Fedora Chronicles. It is our official space, but it's not our space. Eric and me and Larry and Daisy and a few others are curating the space. We're tending the garden, but really it's your space, the fans that are listening to us. And it is a space for all Diesel Punks to come and to discuss and to debate. And the important thing that I think we want to communicate to everybody listening is that Diesel Punks on Facebook is a place where there is no king. There is no central governing authority that you can't disagree with. We are open to all opinions, all thoughts. And look, we're allowed to disagree. And I know Eric's going to have a lot to say about this, but you know, one of the tenets of Diesel Punk is that we're a little bit countercultural, anti-authoritative, or anti-authority. And once someone kind of tries to declare themselves king and demand his or her authority be respected and not questioned, that's when it's no longer punk. And Eric, you had actually written those words almost exactly in your article Requiem for Steampunk.
Exactly. Now we have two controversial articles that I've written that have really sort of gotten me into trouble. Well, you know what? If because the thing is like I wrote Requiem for Steampunk, and I could have changed the title to Requiem for Diesel Punk, and I wouldn't have had to change much of anything. What is killing a lot of these slash punk movements is that you have these people who come in and they demand that because they have been in it, quote, the longest, unquote, they deserve not a place at the table, but at the head of the table, where they get to dictate to everybody else what is and what isn't diesel punk, steam punk, atom punk, ray punk, cave punk, whatever punks there are out there, cabbage punk, if that's your thing, no judgment, no judgment. Okay, just keep it PG or soft R. We don't care. And let's also be honest here. The original punk movement was anti-establishment, anti-authoritarian. So as soon as somebody who is trying to become the authority, it's our nature to push back and say, no, absolutely not. And as everybody knows, I wrote this article called, another article that I wrote is called This is Diesel Punk. And I make it absolutely, totally, perfectly clear that here are the parameters. It has to be retro for the golden era, meaning the 20s, 30s, 40s, up to mid 50s. Where it ends, that's up to you. That's up for debate. And it should have a little retrofuturism in it. Now, and the caveat that I have, and I make this absolutely, totally, perfectly clear, that if you are somebody like myself who wears vintage threads every day, whether it's safari wear, indie wear, what's the name of the main character from The Mummy, whatever it is, if you like to wear 1930s, 40s suits, if you want to go to a Jazz on the Delaware and you want to call yourself a diesel punk, you are a diesel punk, especially if you're listening to a Pandora and you are listening to a techno swing, you are a diesel punk. And we don't mean that as a pejorative. You are one of us. You are part of our family. The idea that somebody is going to tell me, after I've welcomed people into our family, that those people are not part of our family. Nobody voted for you to be the patriarch. Nobody elected you president. You've not been anointed king or messiah of whatever. The minute you start telling people that they are not welcome after I've welcomed them, that is not going to sit well, and I will not put up with that. I will not put up with people with an elitist attitude who seem to think that they have to jump through these hoops before they get to call themselves diesel punk. That is not how it works. This is an anti-establishment, anti-authoritarian movement for this very reason, because we want all the diesel punk refugees who either are new to it, or the people who have been exiled because this one other group decided that they were going to close shop. Everybody who wants to be a diesel punk is a diesel punk. The fact that you want to be a diesel punk makes you a diesel punk. If you wear a fedora and you want to call yourself a diesel punk, you're a diesel punk. If you like listening to vintage jazz that's been reproduced on MP3s, you are a diesel punk. If grandma wants to wear all of her World War II uniforms, if she was, what were the women who were in the army? What do they call those? I want to make sure I get the terminology right.
Blacks.
wax. If your grandma was a wax and she's wearing an eye watch and she says, "Look, darling, I'm a diesel punk just like you." Who the hell are you to tell my grandmother that she's not a diesel punk? And that's where we ran aground a couple of weeks ago. Whereas somebody decided that they were going to tell me what the definition of diesel punk is. And I'll tell you something. I was a diesel punk before there was the word diesel punk, because there were a lot of us back in the early 80s when we were raiding the Army Navy surplus stores to wear the items from the era and mix and match with modern day clothes, you know. Or I was wearing the vintage pinstripe suit with the trainers. You know, I was Doctor Who before Doctor Who. When you look at how David Tennant and Tom Baker dressed as the Doctor, that was us. That was me as Diesel Punk before it was called Diesel Punk. That's where I ran around.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, it was 1986. Harry Anderson, Hello Sucker on Showtime. And that was it for me. I mean, it was fedoras, striped shirts, suits, and painted ties from that day forward. But, so, you know, all of that to say, there was a lot of drama, and we're going to be a drama-free zone. And we don't want to rehash all that, but, you know, Larry, you taught me this lesson early on in the foundation of this podcast, because I used to quote you and Tome and Ottens and Piecraft quite a bit as the quote unquote authority. And I remember you sent me a private message and was like, "Hey, don't do that." it might be true, but don't do that. And it was for this very reason.
And, well, thank you. I'm sitting here kind of listening, and most people might have even sat back and said, "Why is Larry not jumping into this?" You see, I've kind of pulled back on some stuff recently. I think the conversation here has been good here in the podcast, and I'm excited about Diesel Punk's Facebook page. The new Facebook page started. I'm excited about that. I'm excited about Eric taking over dieselpunks.org. That, I mean, I can't, you know, that's going to be fantastic. So, you know, we've gone through this time when we've had a little bit of a, how shall I put it, family strife, to put it that way. And I think it's just going to make Diesel Punks all the stronger as a genre. So, I guess that's what I have to say about it.
Well, I appreciate that. And the clarion call to people listening is, if you're a fan of this podcast and if you're a fan of dieselpunks.org, come join our new Facebook page. And if you know people who need to be a part of this community, who need to know that there's a safe place that they can interact with like-minded people, let them know. Say, "Hey, listen, we know the last place you hung out closed down, shuttered up its boards, or we know that maybe you were turned off by a couple of people, or, you know, some things happened that you are feeling a little bit burned, but come on back. Let's heal the land, so to speak." Mm-hmm. You know, let's bring the Israelites home, you know, and reach out to those people who maybe haven't been a part of the community, or who, you know, feel soured on the community. Let them know there is a place for them, and lead them back to the homeland.
One of the things I really want to make sure that everybody realizes with everything that is going on, John and I and Larry and Daisy and the other admin on this group, this is a group to celebrate you, our fellow Diesel Punks. This is not about us blowing our horn and saying, "Hey, look at all the great things that we're doing." We want you to be able to not spam us so much But we want you to tell us what you're doing. How do you diesel punk every day? Hashtag diesel punk every day. We want you to tell us about the great things that you're doing in the realm of diesel punk. And how can we support you if you have a business where you are providing diesel punk products and services? I want you to be able to say, hey, how can I promote myself on the Fedora Chronicles, the diesel punk, or the diesel punk's site? How can we do this? Because the thing is that, not to get Al Capone, I'm not going to pull out my baseball bat or anything, but I don't win unless the team wins. It's the team. It's important that everybody does their part. And our part is to make sure that you are supported, that you know that you're the part of the family. So, by the way, I'm getting some weird noises from Skype. Are you guys still there?
I accidentally hung up.
Okay.
I'm back.
Okay. All right. But
he's
like
back and he's bad.
I went to hit the unmute button and accidentally hit the disconnect button. They need to not put those side by side.
You know what the thing is, the most important thing is and if you have to edit this down for time, just remember, I want you to go to your window, and I want you to pull up the window, and I want you to scream, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. So I'm going to join the Diesel Punk Facebook group, and
I'm getting the address here for you right here real quick.
It is so easy. Even my cat can remember it. It is facebook.com/groups/dieselpunks. That's the only group that you will need to know, because we have links to everywhere else. So invite your friends.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And
now I expect to see posts from your cat, Eric.
Okay. All right.
Oh, Lord. We've just opened up Pandora's box.
I will help Lila sign on.
The original hip cat.
Yep. So
love it. Love it. Well, so anyway, there's that. And hey, we wanted to talk about a couple of entertainment things, movies, books, stuff like that. Of course, we are, of course, diesel punk and pop culture. And so I want to lead off. I know, Larry, you want to talk about Dunkirk. But before we get to Dunkirk, I was looking at Box Office Mojo today, and the top five grossing movies of 2017, number two is a movie that I consider pure diesel punk, and that is DC's Wonder Woman.
Yes.
Have you guys all seen it yet?
Oh, yeah.
I have not yet had a chance.
I will let you know that after seeing that movie, I have decided that I'm going to encourage my wife to start cosplaying as Gal Gadot. So,
well, I've seen pictures of your wife, Eric, and I gotta ask you a question. How in the world did a bridge troll like you bag a smoking dame like that?
I mean, you see it on TV all the time.
Well, exactly. You've heard of Beauty and the Beast. Well, this is. But I swear to God, if anybody calls her Beast like that, I'll have to hurt them. No, the. I will say this about my wife, and I'm not just saying this because she may be eavesdropping in the other room. My wife sees the beauty in people and things that nobody else can see. She's literally the best person I've ever known. She is it's like the Monty Python, always look on the bright side of life. That's her. She looks at the bright side of everything, and she sees something in me that nobody else is able to see. The great thing about her is that she could have, so if she was alive and what if she was alive during the 30s and 40s, she would have been a supermodel because she has all the right curves in all the right places. So I think that she and I were born in the wrong era.
Well, for those of you listening, if you want to imagine what Eric's wife Carol looks like, just Google Jodie Whittaker, the new Doctor Who.
Ooh.
It is unbelievable. It's uncanny, Eric.
Yeah. Yeah. I got goosebumps when I saw the reveal and I thought, Carol? Now it all makes sense. Now I know where she goes. You know, when she's supposed to be on business trip, she's flying over to London. And it was just like, it's amazing. Can we actually talk about Doctor Who for a second?
Sure, go ahead.
Talk about this. There are two types of people who are really annoying me in the realm of Doctor Who fandom. And if you've seen my office, it does look like an inverse TARDIS. The door jams and the doors are white and the walls are blue. And I've been a Doctor Who fan since maybe the late 70s. I go back a long ways, and the idea that the two people who annoy me the most are the people who are upset that Miss Jodie is going to be the next Doctor. We're talking about a shape changing alien who has been a man for at least maybe 3,000 years now, and I think that the opportunities to tell stories about somebody who has been one gender for a couple of thousand years has to be another gender. I think that's just exciting, and it is very dieselpunk, and it is very, I don't want to say progressive, because the thing is that women answer the clarion call in World War II. Women like Larry reminded me, like we had the WACs who put on a uniform and they did the best that they could under the circumstances. It's very retro for women to pick up the sonic screwdriver, as it were. If they can pick up the Revit gun, they can pick up the sonic screwdriver. But I'm also sort of sick and tired of the people who seem to think that BBC didn't go far enough. They picked the best actress that they could get for the role. I've seen her do other stuff. And all the people who say, it's Doctor Who, it's not Nurse Who. You're an idiot. Oh. That person who says that is an idiot. More than half of the smartest people that I've known in my life are women. So I'm excited about this, and I'm sad that so many Who fans are not giving her the chance. So.
Well, that's an interesting phenomenon that's happening, especially since really it is the fans who have been begging for Doctor Who to be a woman for at least the last 3 or 4 years, maybe longer. I personally was campaigning for Helen Mirren, but that's just me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I think what we have here is a noisy minority, kind of like a mosquito, you know, who makes a lot of noise, buzzes around, gets everybody's attention, but it's still a little irritating gnat that will be swatted when the episode show and we get to see, you know, the new Doctor Who, and everybody shuts up about this. And good, well said, Eric.
Thank you.
Yeah, so hey, you know what? Two big triumphs for women in dieselpunk pop culture. Wonder Woman, number 2 worldwide box office this year, only behind, by the way, Beauty and the Beast, which was a surprise to me. But Beauty and the Beast is number 1. Number 2 worldwide is Wonder Woman. And of course, all the news the last couple of days, last week, has been about Jodie Whittaker and the new Doctor Who. And I think that's a huge win. Huge win. Daisy, what do you think about that?
Well, I think I have been waiting to see Wonder Woman on the big screen for a long time. And to not only finally get to see her on the big screen, but to see her doing as well as she's doing and to see the response that she's getting. Oh, it does my heart good. It does my heart so much good to see Because, you know, a lot of people were worried about it. A lot of people were worried because in the past there have been superhero movies with main female characters that haven't done so well. And because most superhero movies are guys, if one female superhero movie fails, then they just say, oh, well, people don't like movies about women. And they don't try to make another one. So to see Wonder Woman blowing up the way it is, it gives me hope for the future.
I think that
it was an important movie for a couple of reasons. One, the reason that you just said, it proves that you know, a female-led superhero action-adventure film can stand on its own. The suits in Hollywood have denied that reality, you know, until they're blue in the face. But you know, it changes the game, and it's one of the best things that can happen for female superhero characters. And on the other side of that, you know, the other reason it's really just so so important is that here we have, you know, for movies in general, for the superhero genre, and especially DC Comics, they desperately needed this movie to succeed. After disappointments in the box office, you know, they needed a big hit. And for the big hit to come from Wonder Woman, it's significant in a lot of ways. So, I'm super thrilled.
I think that it's also important to interject that Scarlett Johansson is owed a big, huge apology, and they need to get on the stick and make a Black Widow movie starring Scarlett Johansson, a standalone.
Yes.
Immediately.
Well, now the next, there is a female-led Marvel film coming, Captain Marvel, starring Brie Larson. And Captain Marvel is Marvel Comics' premier, I mean, ultimate superhero. She, you know, she is a kick-ass dame. And so that's coming in 2019. I would say, from a character standpoint, though, Eric, I get why people want Scarlett Johansson to lead a Black Widow film. I don't know that the character is strong enough to carry a film, though. Nothing against Scarlett Johansson. She's obviously strong enough to carry a film. You know, she has in several other movies. I just don't know if the character is. I could be wrong. I'd love to be wrong. But, I mean, we are going to get it from Marvel in Captain Marvel with Brie Larson. And we'll see more come down the pike. And maybe a Black Widow movie will happen. You know what would be really great? You know what would be really great?
What?
Is if they do... but see, it couldn't be Scarlett Johansson. What I would love for them to do is a Black Widow movie, but set in the late 1940s after World War II, and really dive into the background of the Red Room and the training and, you know, kind of tying in Agent Carter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anything,
that'd be epic.
Anything for more Agent Carter. Anything for more Agent Carter.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
We're desperate.
Well, we might. Who knows? Agent Netflix. Carter. Netflix is, you know, they're the ones that just might give us another Agent Carter.
Yeah, you know, the problem is there's no interest from ABC Television, Netflix, or Marvel Studios to do more Agent Carter. The fans desperately want it, but for whatever reason, there's just no interest from the studios. I wish we could change that. There is a petition out there on change.org. I don't know. But, Larry, you wanted to talk about Dunkirk.
Oh, yeah. You know, Dunkirk is really exceeding expectations in the box office. One thing's helping is the great reviews. New York Times called it a tour de force war movie, both sweeping and intimate. Rotten Tomatoes is giving it a 92% fresh, Metacritic 94%. So that tells you what the ratings are like. And it's just in all the major markets, UK, US, all the markets, it's just dominating the box office. It's a smash success, pretty exciting. And here's the thing is that, you know, we talk about, well, like Wonder Woman, which is a World War One movie, but and this is set in World War II during the early dark days, is very, very accurate. I read a online interview with someone. It was a 97-year-old veteran of Dunkirk. He got to see a special showing of the movie, and he said, quote, "It was just like I was there again," end quote. Powerful, powerful. I mean, this is a fantastic movie, and if you haven't seen it, get yourself out. Go see this movie. This is a, they say one of the biggest sellings of it is IMAX. They say IMAX is a very popular viewing, which is interesting since it's a war movie, a World War II war movie, that it be a big IMAX hit.
Well, maybe the fact that it's an IMAX hit is what makes it diesel punk. Right, Eric?
Hey, you're ringing my bell. For me, this is the perfect thing, whereas it's like I want people to know more about the history of the era that we are hearkening back to. The thing is it and we need a good diesel punk movie that's historically accurate for so many reasons, including this is a part of the history that we cannot forget. We got to remember that, you know, we almost lost World War II. We almost lost to the Germans. Mm-hmm. You know, this is when people had stood up and said, "No, we're not going to quit." This is when civilians answered the call and said, "We're going to pitch in. We're going to help save the world." If it wasn't for the civilians, if it wasn't for the effort at the home front, I shudder to think what would have happened. We would have been singing Edelweiss, you know, every morning with our cup of coffee, like Man in the High Castle. And it was
I was just going to say, Man in the High Castle is a pretty realistic view of what would have happened.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. Those men that, and I'm glad you mentioned the civilians, Eric. This is not one of those movies that, I don't know if I call it diesel punk to me, right? But I like when you point out that we've got to know the source material. That's really, really important to me. That's that's part of the diesel and the diesel punk. And that was a great tie-in, folks, to how you tied in to Man in the High Castle. You know, that same movie review that I mentioned in New York Times, the last sentence in it ends, "By the time that plane is burning," which is a scene in the movie, "and a young man is looking searchingly into the future, you're reminded that the fight against fascism continues." Let that hang in the air for a minute. That, to me, is one way diesel punk can be so powerful that that it is so timeless and it is still so relevant today.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, we're not just some weekend cosplayers that get together to be, you know, a little bit weird and countercultural once in a while. There's some seriousness to our genre that may not exist in other retro punks. I don't know, but you know, we do consider the historical significance of the time period that we look to. And, you know, I think that is actually kind of a good segue to something that I wanted to bring up real quickly, and then we can move on. Eric, you posted that propaganda poster image for Man in the High Castle on the Diesel Punks Facebook page and just ask the question, well, how does this make you feel?
I actually borrowed it from our buddy from, I cannot pronounce Pavel's last name. I'm sorry for that, but he had posted this on another forum. And, of course, people flipped out. And when that other forum closed shop, that also ended all the conversation. So the thing is, I reposted it, and I wanted to ask the question, why is it that this picture of this family in the 1960s in this alternate universe from Man in the High Castle, why does it bother people so much? Why is it when people see this poster, this promotional poster for Man in the High Castle, people, like, they have a visceral reaction? Whereas it was, and the thing is, like, people get, like, violently angry about that picture. And the thing is that, well, this is what I want to talk about. In a judgment-free zone, I want to know, what is it about that image of that American family with a dog doing the Sieg Heil salute and everybody wearing the swastika armbands? Why do people hate that? Because the thing is that this gets back to something that we talked about earlier in the show. We are so anti-authoritarian. We are so anti, I don't want to use the word fascist establishment, because that implies that we are living in a fascist environment, which that's up for you to decide. I'm not going to tell you one way or another. And the thing is we don't want that. We don't want somebody to put us in a uniform against our will and become a part of what Eisenhower called the military-industrial complex, which that is exactly what we see in Man in the High Castle, whereas it's national socialism, where socialism is focused towards the nationalists in the country. We don't want that. We don't want all of our blood, sweat, and tears to build up this horrific military machine that is like what Orwell and Huxley wrote in their books, whereas it's like it's all for the state, everything's for the state, everything's for the state, it's all for the fatherland, it's all for the homeland. That freaks us out, and we look at that and we're like, I'm gonna hit someone. To me, that's it right there.
Well, I think you hit upon it. I mean, I think the visceral reaction, now, of course, context is everything, okay? The fact that it's about a fantasy show, and I think also a little bit what's going on in the world today about crossing that line where we try to avoid being overly political, there is a lot of, in my opinion, legitimate fear about where America is going. Right now, and and there is also, I think, a legitimate fear. I've expressed this before, a fear that there could be at some point in time a neo-Nazi group that takes an interest in us and tries to co-op Diesel Punk for its own purpose. We've talked about that being a real possibility, and Tom and I. There was a time there when we were having to kind of fight that tendency on dieselpunks.org during its early days.
Well, you remember, Larry, one of the things when Man in the High Castle was first being announced and we were seeing the promotional materials come out for season one, I said here on the podcast that I was concerned that it might end up glorifying Nazi fascism. And that's not a good thing.
And I still have that concern sometimes when you see, especially John Smith. We talked about his Father Knows Best household.
Yeah.
Right. It looks right out of that. And there's some people who say, you know, that. And you know what? That, yeah, you know, wouldn't that be a good thing? And so I think maybe that's the button that it presses for some people.
Well, I'll tell you, Larry, that, you know, season two of Man in the High Castle, you know, I mentioned this on the podcast, you know, the first season, I had to keep reminding myself that, hey, the Nazis are the bad guys. Mm-hmm. But then I really got angry at season two, because not only did I have to keep reminding myself of that, but by the end of the final episode of season two, I was cheering for John Smith. Mm-hmm. And I had to take a step back and go, crap, man, dude, what have you guys done to me? This is a complete mind screw.
Well, and that's the beauty of these writers, I think.
Yeah.
That, you end up at sometimes rooting for the villain because he's not monolithic. He's not black and white. For example, when Hitler's dead. Spoilers on some of this, guys, so watch out. And the from Germany have come these SS advisors as to handle the sporadic uprisings across the American Reich. And they said, and they asked Smith, where's the main, you know, your main uprising taking place? He said, well, probably the heart of it's in Atlanta. And the response is, well, let's destroy Atlanta.
Yeah.
And Smith was like, And he sets in the wheels in motion to gum them up. He slows down to protect Atlanta. He did not want to destroy a fellow American city. So you can't write this. You feel something. And look at the steps he took to try to save his son.
Yeah.
A really good Nazi would have said, well, boy, you know, off to the gas chamber with you.
I think that the most important aspect of Man in the High Castle is that it helps all of us to understand how easily it could happen anywhere. There's also a handful of other books that I think that it's like folks like us need to read. One of them is It Can't Happen Here by Sinclair Lewis. I almost said Upton Sinclair. And the thing is that here is how somebody who is a Pentecostal preacher could bring about fascism here in the United States. And how did the resistance form, you know, in a lot of states like New Hampshire? How could people from New Hampshire rise up against a totalitarian regime? And it was like, there's a lot of alternative science fiction books out there. This is why I love science fiction, because science fiction is not afraid to touch the third rail of what if politics. I cannot recommend this TV show enough as a warning to everybody. You know, hey, boy, it looks good. Those are some really good looking uniforms, and I'd love to be able to have a brand new car and a brand new house, and I want fancy dresses for my beautiful wife, and what's the cost? Your soul. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's an important thing to remember.
Well, yeah, they tell, for example, I can't think of the character's name, Jenny, Jeanette, the survivor, the kind of protagonist in many ways of the movie, when she runs to the Reich because she's on the run from the Japanese, and when she's taken in by John Smith and his wife. Hmm?
Do you mean Juliana?
Oh, Juliana. Thank you. I knew it started with a J. She is, you know, they're setting her up in this apartment for women. And she says, well, when do I get the keys? The lady says, there's no need for keys here in the Reich. And, you know, some people would look at this and say, hey, you know, the people, law and order, safe streets. And I bet the streets in New York were very safe in New York, in the New York of the Third Reich. But what price freedom?
Well, and Larry, the way you just said, there are no keys here, really creeped me out just then.
Yeah, it was meant to be creepy.
If there's no need for keys, if there's no keys,
That means the state can just go in and look at whatever they need to of yours.
And they go, Daisy. And absolutely he, right. And, he, but he, and that was also the second point behind her message to her. It was like, you know, what are you hiding? You have no reason to hide anything, even from the state. So, yeah, it was meant to it creeped her out, and it creeped me out when I was watching the TV show when the wife told her that.
Well, but here's the issue thing is that it was just like we talk about our security, and we talk about, you know, is our information secure? And I was talking about this on the Metaphysical podcast today about, you know, predictions made by George Orwell and Upton Sinclair and Mr. Huxley for Brave New World, and we're talking about, you know, surveillance state. They never imagined that we would actually be willingly volunteering all that information on this thing called social media. And thanks to social media, thanks to Amazon, because of our buying habits, thanks to the internet, hey, look, we don't need no NSA to break into your computer and get all your vital information. You're volunteering it already, you know? They already know everything that they want to know about you because you're volunteering the information. And there's nothing you can do about that because, well, you know, you want to get on Facebook to talk about Diesel Punk, don't you? You know, and it was just like, it kind of freaks me out how it's like, the thing is that we don't need keys on the doors because they're already able to get in because we invite them in. Come on in, folks. See what I'm doing. Check out Instagram and see what I had for dinner tonight. I know how to kill a conversation, don't I?
No, you were making some great points. I was, you know.
Yeah. So speaking of which, come over to Facebook and join Diesel Punks, the official discussion forum for everyone. Diesel Punk. Yeah, way to promote there, Eric. Good job. Good job.
But do I know how to undo the hard work that we've done already? Oh, boy. So.
Oh, it's funny. It's funny. Well, good stuff. And, hey, you know, kind of back to topic on Dunkirk. One of the exciting things about this movie, Larry, is that it's a movie I can go see with my dad.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, he hates science fiction and comic book stuff. He doesn't get it. It's too far out there. But man, if it's a Western or a war movie, he's all about it. So, you know, it's kind of and my son, who's 17, he just likes good movies. So, you know, it's something that kind of unites three generations.
Sure. I saw one review that said it was a strange war, anti-war movie. It said it was a great movie, but said it was strange in that it was a war movie, but at the same time an anti-war movie. And I think what they meant by that is that it didn't glorify war. I always said one of the best anti-war movies was Gallipoli.
I think any really good realistic war film is inherently an anti-war movie because it really will accurately portray how horrific it is.
Exactly. That well said.
But yep. I do think that these World War II movies fill something for all of us because the thing is that we are looking for a cause. I think our generation is looking for some kind of cause to rally behind. And I think that's one of the reasons why we're slowly going crazy, because the thing is that we don't have a goal. We don't have a, and I'm not saying we should nationalize whatever, but I'm saying that we, you know, cause you know, 50 years ago we were pushing for the moon and that was a big, huge thing. And what do we do after the moon? I think that for about 20 or 30 years, we've not had something to rally behind, some kind of big, huge, I don't want to call it an American crusade because of the connotations that has, but we don't have a quest. We don't have a call to action. Mm-hmm. And we look backwards, you know, towards that. And we get excited about, I wish I could go and fight Nazis. You know, we're looking for that.
Well, you know, that's some very interesting points. You know, the World War II, some have called it the last good war. And what they meant was that it was the last time that the whole country got behind a war. Every war since has been horribly divisive ever since. And that one, though, really brought the country together. 9/11 comes the closest event since to bring the country together, and that didn't last long. But, you know, when I read that review, that interview with that gentleman, that veteran, that hero that fought, that was there at Dunkirk, he would probably say, no, you don't want to go back. Because he said that he talked about that it saddened him seeing the film because he knew he couldn't see his old friends again, and that, quote, tonight I cried because it's never the end. Then he goes on to say, this human species, we are so intelligent. We do such astonishing things. We can fly to the moon, but we still do stupid things.
Yeah.
Is what this gentleman said. So, I think this gentleman would probably disagree with us about his, oh, by the way, this gentleman's name is Ken Sturdy. This is the hero's name that I'm quoting.
Great name for a hero. Sturdy.
Indeed. Yep.
That's cool. That's cool. Well, excellent. Excellent. Daisy, you've been kind of quiet this during that conversation, but
well, you were talking about stuff I hadn't really seen, so I didn't have a lot to add besides, oh yeah, I'd like to see that.
But you have
finished, I did.
You have finished a series on Crunchyroll that we talked about on the last roundtable.
Yes, I did.
Night Raid, is that what it's called? Night Raid 1934?
Night Raid 1931.
Okay.
And I finally finished it. And, you know, if you're into spies, if you're into alternate history, especially a kind of history that we don't get to hear very much about, because most of the history that we learn about is Western history. But, you know, this is set in China. It starts out in Shanghai, but it moves all over the country in the 1930s. And these are Japanese spies in China in the 1930s. And if you think of Japan-China relations in the 1930s, that was an extremely tense and turbulent, scary time for relationships between those two countries, because that was when Japan was trying to expand and, you know, take over countries around them. And, but these, and it's kind of hard to tell on which side of history this series is. So I can't, you know, it's a little bit complicated. You know, if you want to get some deep historical, political spy thriller type story, this is a good one. And also, it has a little bit of, what is it? It has some, the spies all have different kinds of psychic powers. And, you know, like they can communicate with each other telepathically, or they can teleport, or they can move things, you know. So that's part of what makes it Dieselpunk, is that it has some of those sci-fi and fantasy elements in it. But I thought it was pretty exciting. From what I've heard, it didn't do so well, mostly because it was a little too deep and or controversial for audiences on this side of the divide, but it is on Crunchyroll, so if you have access to that, I would recommend at least trying to give it a watch, because It is a fascinating show, and I got to really care about these characters, and there were some heart-pounding moments there in those last couple of episodes. I don't want to get too spoilery, mostly because the intrigue layers get so thick near the end. Good luck for me to keep them in line.
Well, and for our listeners listening, mm-hmm. it is an anime series.
Yes.
And there are two versions of it. One in Japanese and mm-hmm. one that's dubbed, right? Japanese with subtitles or one that's dubbed?
I think on Crunchyroll all you can see is the subtitle version. I know there's a dub out there somewhere. I don't know exactly where it is. I know something about, at least on the Japanese version. I don't know about the versions released in the West. But there are extra episodes on the Blu-ray and DVDs. And one of those sounded like something I'd really want to see. So I'm wondering if I can't try to get my hands on that. Because one of them had to do with the movie industry, and you know I love stories that have to do with that. So, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh no! It's very fascinating that you're talking about this, because I haven't seen this in years. I saw this several years ago.
Oh, you did? You've seen it?
Yeah, it's a great series, and I highly recommend it. Very complex. It was a refreshing surprise to come out of Japan.
Because that part of their history is very controversial over there, and they don't like to acknowledge it. The fact that this series exists at all made it controversial. In fact, I think it was episode 7, the one that dealt with a really controversial incident in their history. That one was streamed online because the broadcasters did not want to put that on TV.
I'm not surprised.
No,
I'm not surprised. I think you'd probably talk about you're talking about what I thought was a primary issue here, the Manchurian incident. See,
yes,
yeah, that's what surprised me. Was I was really shocked to see that this program dealt with the Manchurian incident, and in such a way that I thought was rather critical. Which they're still struggling in Japan with their role in the war. There's been some discussion that among historians that really World War II was kicked off by the Manchurian incident.
Oh yeah,
that it was the actual kickoff for World War II, and not the actions in Europe by Germany. So I agree with you. I think it was a very good movie, a very good series. I'm sorry, it really it's gotten good reviews.
Yeah.
Saying that it's very noir. Some have compared it to Ghost in the Shell standalone complex.
I haven't seen that, so I can't compare it. But I wouldn't be surprised. It has a lot of the similar underground noir kind of feel to it.
Uh huh. So. Yeah, good choice, Daisy. Good choice. I think everybody, if you can get it, see, I don't remember what I saw it on. I don't know if who was showing it at the time, whether it was whatever that
Adult Swim. Crunchyroll is the service I use, yeah.
It might have been Adult Swim at the time. I don't know who was showing it. But good.
Speaking of Japan and China conflict, I discovered a really cool movie on Netflix.
What's that?
I love Netflix because I get to see these really intricate, complex kung fu movies. And Chinese film right now, it has a lot of heavy diesel punk influence in it. But this movie is right up our alley. It's called Once Upon a Time in Shanghai, and it is a diesel punk supernatural kung fu movie set in Shanghai. This war between the different gang bosses, and this one young kid who's from the country, who comes to Shanghai, who is supernaturally strong, and he becomes the hero of the story. And that's all I'm going to say about it. It's set in Shanghai in the 30s, and one of the main elements is the Japanese trying to occupy Shanghai, working with organized crime to take over. And this character, the lead character, the hero, thwarts that effort. And it's pretty cool. Pretty cool movie. It's well worth your time, especially if you're a diesel punk that's into kung fu movies.
What's it called again, Johnny?
Once Upon a Time in Shanghai.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, it's great. Indeed. You'll love it. You'll love it, Larry.
Okay, there's one more series that I plan on watching. There's one in my queue right now. It's called 91 Days. I think I've brought it up before, but it's an anime series set in the U.S. during the Prohibition era. I think this one's going to be a little more historical. I don't know if it's going to get into anything, any sci-fi or fantasy elements from reading what it's about. It seems like it's going to be the story of Angelo Lagusa and his quest to seek revenge against the Vanetti family. So it looks like we're going to have some dealings with the mob and some revenge for past wrongs that have been done. And whether it's diesel punk or not, it's definitely diesel era. And I have a friend who's watched it, and she recommends it. She says it's a real exciting series. So we'll see how that goes.
Can't wait to hear more about it.
I always love to see the Japanese interpretation of American culture, American history. It's really interesting.
Well, very cool, guys. Eric, you got anything else we need to address, talk about, discuss, bring up tonight?
Well, you know what? I was thinking to myself, do I really want to share this now? And I said, yeah. I don't know if you guys know this or not, but I'm really into diesel punk, and I'm really into the 1930s and 40s safari look. I know.
Really?
Yeah, really.
Wow.
So it's been kind of a secret of mine. It's a secret passion. The thing is like, if you're old enough to remember, and I'm sure John is, because I think John and I are about the same age, you remember the original Banana Republic, correct?
The store Banana Republic?
The original, like, before 1992. Do you remember what Banana Republic looked like before 1992?
Yeah, it looked like a safari hut. Right. And they had, like, safari-inspired clothing.
I just finished rereading a book that I'm going to be reviewing on the Fedora Chronicles main site, and it's called Wild Company, and it is about the formation of the original Banana Republic. And it's something that you have got to read, and it reads like an adventure novel about how the Zieglers went out and they found surplus clothes that other countries had no idea what to do with. They had literally hundreds of thousands of uniforms and cartridge belts and bags, everything you can possibly imagine that was made between the end of World War One and at the end of the Vietnam War. And nobody knew what to do with it. And they sold them, and they made a fortune, and they were opening stores all over the place. And it was just an incredible time to be able, if you were a diesel punk before the word diesel punk was even a word, it was the time. That was the time when retro was king, and it was old. And the thing is that this monster, Mickey Dreskel, took over the Gap, which had bought Banana Republic, had actually partnered with Banana Republic, because after Banana Republic ran out of all the surplus stuff, they had started making their own high quality stuff. People still have Banana Republic clothes out there that they're selling on Etsy. And it still looks brand new. This monster, Mickey Dreskel, simply did not like the safari look. He did not like what he thought was the chintzy look. He didn't like the he didn't like the retro vibe, as it were. And he gutted the company and he turned it into just another clone of all the other clothing stores that are out there. Well, it's good to know that this man was finally forced to retire before being fired, because the company that he moved over to, J. Crew, is now also in trouble. This guy has left just these incredible franchises just in shatters and tatters and losing profits left and right. Well, he was the man who decimated J. Crew and Banana Republic, was forced to retire, and I could not be happier. So it's a win for diesel punks everywhere.
I have a love-hate relationship with Banana Republic. Now, because we are the same age, and I remember going to those stores and salivating over the clothes that they had. However, at 300 plus pounds, nothing they sold fit me. So I was always leaving disappointed.
I do remember that they changed once they partnered with the Gap. And they were using their manufacturers to reproduce a lot of the items. They were making clothes for larger sized people. So,
by that time I actually had gotten down to a normal size, and so it didn't matter that much. I could get clothes anywhere. But anyway, thanks for bringing up painful memories there, Eric.
It's a talent. It's a gift. It's a gift.
Anyway, well, hey guys, we've been gone well over almost 2 hours here. Can you believe it? Where does the time go?
I'm spending it with my favorite people. What can I tell you?
And look, there's so much more that I wish we had time to talk about. I may have to do a solo episode later this week, just to get in some stuff about some new comics coming out. I've got an idea for a new video project through YouTube. I'll just throw it out there. I've done, for the last 9 months, did a video review show called the Roll and Go Game Review Show, where we reviewed family games that are easy to learn, quick to play, or quick to learn, easy to play. Well, we've kind of gone through the stock that we had, and now I'm looking around, and there's a lot of diesel punk games coming out, or that have been out. And so here's my idea. Diesel punk game night.
There you go.
That's all I'm going to say. I'm going to leave it right there. Anyway, any last words, Larry, Diana, Daisy? Oops.
Who's Diana?
Diana Prince. Diana Wonder Prince. Woman. Wonder Woman. He's got Wonder
She's
Woman on the brain.
She's been here this whole time.
Yes. Yes.
He's got Wonder Woman on the brain.
I do.
Yeah. That's what it is.
Do you know that I learned, I shouldn't say this publicly, I learned how to kiss a woman with a poster of Linda Carter as Wonder Woman hanging up in my bedroom.
Who didn't?
Well, we all have to start somewhere.
Yeah.
Mine was Alexander Siddig as Dr. Bashir. So, I mean, hey.
There you go.
Mine was Olivia Newton-John, and it was an album cover, so.
Larry?
Larry, any confessions you want to make?
Well, the poster that was in mine for Farrah Fawcett from
Charlie's Angels.
Charlie's Angels, yeah.
Yeah, I had a Farrah Fawcett too, but it was that Linda Carter, man. Linda Carter made me a man. Anyway.
In your dreams.
Well, here's a little side story. My dad, my mom and dad were actually friends with Linda Carter. And I have a couple of pictures. I never met her myself, but someday I'm going to write a book about my dad's life. And I've got these great pictures of them together at one of the Reagan's inaugural balls. And pretty fascinating stuff. So I'm 2 degrees of separation from Linda Carter. So there you go.
There you go.
All right. Well, I think it's time to say goodnight. Larry, you want to kick us off?
Well, it's thanks, Johnny. You know, as at least in the Northern Hemisphere, we are well into summer. And I don't know about where you're at, but here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, it's hot. So, you know, bring in the dogs, cats, check on your neighbors down the street. Make sure everybody's doing okay. Everybody has AC, you know, fans going. Take care of each other, because that's what life is all about.
Absolutely. Daisy?
Well, I agree with what Larry said, because it has been very hot and muggy here in Memphis. And I could just say these past almost 2 hours have been the coolest I've been all week, because I've been with Big Daddy Cool.
Swinging solid, baby. I can dig that. Eric, any last words for our fans and listeners?
Thinking about the love of my life and my youth reminds me of these words. A place where nobody dared to go. The love that we came to know. They called it Xanadu. Keep your chins up and your fedoras on.
Swinging, baby. And as always, on behalf of the entire Diesel Punk podcast crew, this is Big Daddy Cool saying swing hard, swing often. We'll catch you on the flip side.